this week I was introduced to a place I had never heard of before. This is found in the western highlands of Guatemala. And the name of this city or town, if you will, is Almolonga. Now, this village or city is known by the title of the Vegetable Basket of the Americas. And this is in thanks to the sheer number of vegetable farmers that are found there. But even more than that, like the epic size of their produce and how quickly it grows is tremendous. If you look online on the internet, you can see like their carrots are the size of people's forearms. They're huge. They're just massive. I've never seen vegetables so big. Now, this is not the only reason that this place is interesting, because in the late 70s, this town didn't have the same amount of produce that it has now. They're shipping about 40 truckloads of vegetables out of their city weekly. But in the 70s, there was extreme alcohol abuse. They had four prisons in the town, and idolatry was rampant. They would frequently take busloads of people from the jail, from the four jails, because it was so busy, and they would bus them to a bigger city to keep them there, because it was constantly overrun and filled with people. These people were dirt poor. They could barely afford to live. And the land around them just wasn't prosperous. But there was a turning point. People started to turn from paganism, and they started to believe in God. More and more people became Christians, until almost the entire city became Christianized. The issues with their idol worship stopped and disappeared. Their alcoholism disappeared. Their jails, all four of them, closed. And this is a city of about 25,000 people. Now, this is incredible to think about in a country that is predominantly Catholic and steeped in paganism. And the video I watched, it stated that when the people were converting to Christianity, many were fasting 3 to 4 times per week. In their limited understanding, they were doing the best that they could to please God. And I always find it fascinating that when people start to change their ways, things start to get better. It's not always perfect, right? Sometimes old past hurts linger. But it's like the Apostle Paul says in Philippians 3, 13 and 14, you keep striving forward. You keep pressing forward, moving forward, not looking back at those things that were behind. Yeah, I had to contemplate when studying for this sermonette that this story of these people there in Guatemala is so similar in nature to the city of Nineveh. And of course, that's found in the book of Jonah. Again, a very great city, both in size and in the amount of people. Now, before Jonah, there was a king whose name was King Sennacherib, who troubled Judah. He was a king of Nineveh. And you can read the story of how Hezekiah relied on God for protection and for help in 2 Kings chapter 18. So Nineveh played an important role throughout history in a few different ways. Now, when Jonah went to them to proclaim to them what was going to happen, as we know from the story, it's very interesting how fast they turned around. So if you will turn to Jonah chapter 3 and beginning in verse 1. And we'll read to verse 10. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you." So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent. And Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. And then he cried out and said, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh will be overthrown." And so the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth, from the greatest to the least of them. Everybody, the entire city, decided to do this. And the word came to the king of Nineveh, and he rose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, "Let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish?" Then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. In each of these stories, these people were willing to turn to God. In the case of Nineveh, it lasted a few years until they faced their destruction about 3 years later. And most likely what happened is they just went back to their old ways. But that initial repentance and turning to God is what broke that initial destruction that by God. In Matthew 12 and verse 41, Christ says, "The men of Nineveh will stand up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and now something greater than Jonah is here." Again, we see the act of turning to God, humility, repenting, acknowledging wrong. Seeking after God is not something that we can do just whenever we feel like it. God's relationship with us cannot be like our relationship with human beings, though I think it has a tendency sometimes to become that way. And I mean this from the standpoint of our close relationships, our spouses, our children, people to whom we are extremely close. Sometimes we end up treating these people with contempt. Maybe not the best, because we become too familiar. The statement "familiarity breeds contempt" is something that rings true. But we cannot let this happen with our relationship with God. We must be constantly seeking him, wanting him to be a part of our lives. You know, it's when we stop doing this, when we stop really, truly seeking after him, that's when we start to wobble, to stumble and crash. And then we have to pick ourselves up and start over again. Seeking after God is not something we do and then stop after a time because we get tired or we lose hope or life gets in the way or we're too busy. Or is it that sometimes that is what happens? But brethren, if this is what happens to us, this is detrimental to us. In 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 2, it states, "The Lord is with you when you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you." This process is ongoing. It does not stop. It is reliant on us to continue it. In James 4 and verse 8, it states, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." But the opposite of that is true as well. When we don't draw close to God, he will remove himself and his blessings from us. And then that purification which we had worked so hard for gets lost. The double-mindedness comes back. The spots of the world start to take over again. And so we must combat this by remaining close to God, making sure that we're seeking him. And finally, in Isaiah 55 and verse 6 and 7, it says, "Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near." There may become a point in your life where if you haven't been seeking after God enough, God won't be near. "Let the wicked forsake his ways and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon." What an amazing thing, what an amazing opportunity we have to continue to seek after God. But that is just what it is going to have to take, us seeking God.